My point is, when you change, when you attend Dharma, you do Dharma, you do Dharma work, you write, you teach, you write, you teach, you clean, you set up offerings, you attend to your Lama, or you print books. Whatever Dharma work you do is wonderful, but it has to lead to fundamental change. And what's that fundamental change? You attack your fears and you expose it. Stop attacking other people and stop protecting your fears. You've got to stop protecting your fears. Why do you got to stop protecting your fears? It's not helping you. And the reason you attack other people is because you want to be happy. Actually, when we criticize and scold and yell at people, we actually want to be happy, because we're sending a message: don't say that about me, don't hit that deep point about me. But you see, we're attacking the wrong people. We're attacking the wrong people all the time. That's why it's better to be kind. It's better to be forgiving. And if we work for our Lama, it's very important to have a fundamental change. Don't offer service and money and all these things in exchange for attainments. That's not what your Lama's looking for. Don't make a delicious sandwich for your Lama, but you yourself is still selfish. Don't. Make a sandwich and offer your selfishness up. How do you offer it up? How do you offer selfishness to your Lama? By transforming your mind, a fundamental change. That's why we do all these classes. I am giving you knowledge on what you can do to improve everything in your life and everything around you. And I promise you, everything in your life and everything around you will improve if you do what I have shared with you. Because I didn't make any of this up. I never make up teachings. Do you know why? I'm all over the internet. I'm all over the world. I don't want to misrepresent my guru, my abbot, my lamas. I wouldn't want to misrepresent His Holiness ever. No. But I'm not worried about misrepresentation. I don't want to hurt your spiritual minds. If I make you practice things that damage you, you're damaged for life. I can't do that. Never. I will never do that. Never. I don't get anything out of it. It'd be nicer if I tell you nice things and real practice. Then at least I get an angbawa. Right? If I tell you lies and crap and things that are not true, you're not going to give me an angbawa, some more you throw the oranges at me. Yeah. So why would I want that? I want money. I want praise. I want nice thrones. I want nice food. I want respect. I want love. I want you to call me His Holiness, His Eminence, His Magnificence. So how am I going to do that? By being nice and teaching you the Dharma, and teaching you the Dharma that's real. Because some of you in this room look pretty stupid. You're kind of like, pretty stupid. But you know what? You won't remain stupid. Because you will learn and learn and learn. You see, in Malaysia, they don't encourage stupidity. That's why everybody here is educated, upmarket, and exposed. They don't encourage stupidity. You go to Tibet, that's a different story. They don't encourage, but nothing encourages toward education either. You'll see in this video what they look like. I'm not proud. I'm not proud. It's just a fact. So some of you look pretty stupid, but you won't remain stupid. Look, when I entered the monastery, I looked really stupid. To some of them now, I still look stupid, but never mind. When I went in on a taxi. When I went out, I flew on a throne. So da-da-da, oops. That's right. So therefore, page 69. We're going pretty fast. We're almost done. Anyways, knowledge. We are certainly familiar with the fact that we tend to think... Oh, I'm sorry, page 69, 1, 2, 3 paragraph down. We are certainly familiar with the fact that we tend to think and feel certain things over and over again. This is a common run of human thought and feelings. Then within the range of normal human thinking, feelings, and sensing, we also tend to have personal habits accumulated from our experiences of growing up. Those thoughts and feelings are often not about what's happening now, but more like layered reflections of previous existences, experiences. One of the characteristics of being awake is the willingness and capacity to notice and respond to what's happening in the present than rather to rerun the past compulsively. So what does that mean? It's very beautiful. Why is that beautiful? You know when someone says something to us and we react back negatively? Sometimes it's not even about that person who talked to us. Sometimes it's about someone way in the past that we experienced talked to us like that, and we were hurt and we reacted back to them. So every time we have someone similar to them talking to us like that, we react back again. And after a while, we even forget why we react back like that. We just do. Do you know why? Because it's an experience that we have. So when we, what Buddha is trying to say, and what this person here, Julie, is trying to say is, the way we're acting with people and the way we think and the way we function is totally a projection, because we are constantly reliving our experiences with a new person. And that's why we need a fundamental change. Because when there's a fundamental, Joseph, fundamental? When we have a fundamental change, then all the outer manifestations of that change will happen. It's very clear. So therefore, again and again, even in therapy, in Western therapy, when they go for therapy, they eventually go down to the pain. The little girl was touched. The little boy was molested. They were a middle child. They suffered a war. Their mother was killed, or they saw someone being killed, and that trauma is in them. And every time they come across a situation similar, they relive it again. And how they react with the person is they're reliving that experience. That's exactly what Buddha says. That's why Buddhism is excellent for psychotherapy. Excellent. Why? That's what we're doing all day long. We're reliving an experience that we experienced many years ago and many lifetimes ago. So it's been many lifetimes we have anger and harsh speech and selfish mind for many lifetimes. And so to break through this habituation, we need to realize that A, we can break through it. B, it is reliving the experience, and that we're not living in the moment. When you live in the moment, what does that mean? It doesn't mean enjoy everything around you, forget everything. No. Living in the moment in Buddhism means what? It means not projecting anything around you from a previous experience. Living in the moment means not projecting to anything around you, people, things, situations, from a previous experience. And that's how you live in the moment. It's not the Western kind of have fun. Hey, live the moment. It's not that. That's samsara, live the moment. That live the moment creates more unhappy moments. The living the moment right now is what? Is when you train yourself to live the moment again and again and again. Do you know what happens? You stop projecting onto others your previous experiences. Your previous experiences stop getting projected onto others. So if we have harsh speech, maybe when we're little, we had to have harsh speech because we had to be heard by our family. Maybe we're middle child. Maybe we're in a family that people didn't like us, and we had to make ourselves heard. So we got used to that. But we have to understand, it's not like that now. It's not like that now anymore. Since it's not like that now anymore, if we use the same method, it ain't going to work. Maybe previously when we spoke like that, we got heard. But now if we speak like that, nobody wants to hear you anymore. So when we live the moment, or we experience the moment, it means to experience people and things and everything around you for what they are and how it is right now, not what you experienced before. Example, if a boy was rejected by a girl many times, he will be very nervous to go to a new girl. But not every girl in the world is like that. Not every girl. Not every girl will have the same reasons. So maybe if you keep trying, you will meet the right girl. I mean, just a very simple example. But the guy will have this fear. Why will he have this fear? Because he had that experience before. So every time he sees a new girl, he's nervous, he's shaking, he's sweating. I mean, they romanticize it on a book. They write it in the movies. It's so fun. It's so cute. Actually, it's not cute. It's not cute at all, because how we feel nervous about approaching a new girl is the same of how we experience everything in our life. So if someone says something to us that's not nice, we shout back, we fight back, we tell them off. We don't care who's around or where we are or what it is, we tell them off. Why? Because it worked before. We think. So we're not living in the moment. Why are we not living in the moment? We live from projections, and we project. And that gets heavier and deeper. And that's the scary part. That is what makes us create unhappiness with ourselves and everybody around us, is projections. Think. Don't leave today's session without thinking about this point. Please don't leave today's session. So many people have put this together. So much effort was here to teach. So much was expended to make this all happen. So much work. Make that work have results. And what's the result? Leave today at the end of our session knowing that our emotional problems and difficulties with everybody around us is not from God, is not from people. It's from ourselves, because we keep equating a new situation with an old one. Maybe when we were younger and we went to school, we weren't very good, and the teacher scolded us, well, so we close up, we can't learn. And then we make this mental block, and we say, I can't learn, I can't improve. So then we grow up. So when a new teacher comes and teaches us things, we don't learn. We don't want to learn. Why? Because the old teacher in school, with a new teacher, we have the experience, we say, it's going to be like that, what? And we close off. And why does that become worse when we get older? Because what we close off will become stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger. Why? Each time someone teaches us, no, stronger. Later, cannot break already. That's why your gurus challenge you and push you and tell you off and give you work and give you assignments and do in such a way to transform your mind to break that powerful habituation. That habituation is projections. What is a projection? It's something that happened before that we're afraid will happen again. And even if what happens before happens again, you know how we can stop it? By challenging it. If we challenge it, we might have another 20 girls reject us. We might have another 20 teachers reject us. But the 21st girl or the 21st teacher might not. And then we'll move on. And that is why we need the paramita of not giving up and perseverance and endurance. Because when we give up on ourselves. We give up on ourselves. And we don't deserve that. We all love ourselves. Love ourselves the correct way. It's very clear what the Buddha says. And what the Buddha says, these great practitioners are saying. Great practitioners. Why are they great? Because they can say this. And they can realize this. Living in the moment, let me reiterate for that chapter. Living in the moment, each chapter I took something out. Living in the moment means not taking a past experience, blowing out of proportion into the current experience. And you will see a lot of things change. A lot. Page 70. Page 70 says that we need to stand up, stretch, and sit down real quick. Good. See, Rinpoche doesn't get to stretch because it's not elegante. I got to look like I'm composed and I've meditated and I've stayed in retreats for years and months and days, and so I can sit like this and not move and nothing happens. I'm a good actor. Page 70, last paragraph. Beautiful. Oh, I love this. I really love it. When we started, I was sure it would be difficult to talk about devotion, but now it seems simple enough to say that devotion is progressive willingness and capacity to pay attention to the awakened state and be changed by it. In this process, the awakened state is modeled and demonstrated and induced by the teacher. As a somaticist, I am interested in what my teachers show me bodily and energetically. Somaticism is studying the body and its functions. A somatic therapist is someone that actually does healing for the body and therapy for the body, separate from the mind. They don't counsel your mind. That's a somaticist, okay? My teachers, however, are far more interested in drawing my attention to awareness without limit. It is important to be willing to be moved and touched by your teacher. This requires you to be aware and alert and relaxed and allow the habitual patterns of body, energy, and mind to ease and open and resolve. Dissolve. The traditional Tibetan suggestion is to let your mind mix with the mind of the teacher like water in water. My experience is that the effects go far beyond what we commonly consider the mind. Okay? Page 71, top paragraph in the center. As women in the West, and this is going to be applied to everyone here, as women in the West, we may have been brought up to assume that someone who loves us will rescue us from our troubles, save us from ourselves and others, make all the difference between mere survival and flourishing. At some deep level, no matter how well we understand the matter of projection, we are likely to feel that we are going suddenly and radically to be all right just because this love is there, just because we have met embodied love. Many of these feelings were there for me even though I understood them very well. So what is this saying? You know what devotion is? Do you know what devotion is? It is a progressive. Progressive means step by step. Willingness and capacity to pay attention to the awakened state of mind and to be changed by it. It means deep down inside you are compassionate. Deep down inside you are giving. Deep down inside you do not give up. Deep down inside you are intelligent. Deep down inside your mind has no limits, no beginning and no end. Deep down inside, you have the potential to be an awakened being. And to become that awakened being, you must reach that inner being, that inner quality that you have in you. So devotion is willingness to accept that you can win. You can be successful. You can overcome. You can become different. You can be respected and loved and cared about. You can touch people's lives. You are worth something. Devotion to your guru means you can be a winner. And it's progressive. That is what real devotion is. People think devotion is whatever your guru says, you don't talk back. People think guru devotion is give all your money and your family and all your loved ones and everything you have, give it to your guru. Give everything to him. That's not devotion. Devotion means, oh, you can stay up 3 a.m. in the morning, and you can sleep 2 hours and do Dharma work and never get tired, and you can be a slave for your guru. That's not guru devotion. That is not. Guru devotion is to stop telling yourself you can fail and stop protecting your failure and all the times that you have failed to stop protecting that failure by being nasty and negative and ugly to other people. By stop being negative and ugly and nasty to other people, you stop protecting your failure. When you stop protecting your failure, that is devotion. Why is that devotion? Devotion means to do something again and again and again without lapse. Lapse. To do it again and again and again without lapse is devotion. And guru devotion, real guru devotion, is to listen to your guru when he tells you, you can learn that. You can transform your anger. You can achieve and be successful. You can be a great person. When the guru tells you, stop hiding, stop avoiding, stop running away, that is guru devotion. So guru devotion is progressive willingness to face your fears and to face your failures and your fear of failure being exposed openly with your guru. It doesn't mean announcing it to the world, to your guru. How do you get healed with a doctor if you don't tell him your whole medical history? If you hide. You have 50 operations, you go, doctor, I haven't been touched in my life. You're addicted to Prozac, I don't take any drugs. You can't sleep without Xanax and you tell him, I sleep like a baby. So of course the doctor is going to give you all mixed up medicine. If you don't expose yourself to the doctor and lie and hide to your doctor, how will your doctor heal you? So if you hide with your guru, and you play games, and you avoid, and you run, and you fight, and you do all kinds of things with your guru, how can the guru heal you? You think about it. Guru devotion is accepting one's failure, and that one has failed in certain parts of one's life. And guru devotion is saying that you don't have to fail anymore. But it's hard work, because not to fail anymore, you must be perseverant, you must be patient, you must be generous, you must be forgiving, and you must have enthusiastic effort. That is guru devotion. Every time you don't give up, you have guru devotion. Every time you don't give up, you do your prayers, that's not guru devotion. Every time someone offends you or makes you relive a past experience that is horrible and you want to scream at them and you control yourself, that is guru devotion. Every time you show love and compassion to others who hurt you, that is guru devotion. So when you become devoted to your guru, that is a sign of guru devotion. Why? Being physically attached to your guru is not guru devotion, because your guru will die. Lord Buddha had to die. Definitely an ordinary person like me have to die. That's real guru devotion. And if you have real guru devotion, you will find a guru inside of you. And when you feel the love of your guru, and you want the love of your guru, and you feel your guru loves you, and your guru has love, do not surrender to the love in a wrong way. How do you surrender the love to the wrong way? Let me tell you. When you feel that the guru will take care of your problems, solve your misery, give you much money that you want, always find a way to help you out of your problems and difficulties. No. That's not love of a guru. That's extortionism. Extortionism? Huh? That's extortionism. When you say, my guru loves me because he gave me money, or he gave me help, or he gave me food, or he gave me this, or gave me that, that's not love. And you're not feeling love, and you're just covering up by saying love. That is your greedy mind. Again, not facing yourself and taking care of your own problems. Very simple. And it has not have to do with money, it can be emotions. You do something bad, you go to your guru and say all kinds of things and create schism, or try to cover your tracks, try to cover your mistake. Very bad. Why is that very bad? You're not exposing your disease to the doctor openly. How will you get healed? How? You think about that. So love of a guru is unconditional, not conditions. You see, we think that our gurus must love us unconditionally. They do. But actually, we put conditions on their love. If I'm financially in trouble, they must help me. Then my guru loves me. Then when I tell other people, see, my guru's kind one. If I need help, my guru is available 24 hours a day for me. If I want to do something at this time, at that time, my guru has to do it that way. We make a lot of conditions for our teacher. We make a lot of conditions for our teacher, and our teachers must fulfill that condition. Then, therefore, we say, he loves us. That's not love. That's not love at all. Love of a guru is when you follow what your guru says, in the transformation of your character and your fundamental mind. And when you transform your fundamental mind, then you love your guru and your guru loves you. Because love is never having to suffer again. And how can the guru make sure you don't suffer? By making sure you transform your mind. So if you think getting gifts and getting special SMSs or special letters or whatever is love from your guru, or money, you're wrong. You're sadly wrong. And if you think your guru is giving you love through that way, you're also sadly wrong. You're sadly wrong. And if you think you're not getting gifts or attention and therefore your guru doesn't love you, you're also sadly wrong. Why are you sadly wrong? Do you know what your guru is thinking in his mind? Do you know what method your guru is using on you now? If you doubt your guru's method, then why is he even your guru? And if you doubt one guru, you'll doubt another one. You doubt another one, you'll doubt another one. Because you'll keep taking past experiences and projecting onto new experiences. Definitely. That's why guru hopping is looked down upon in Tibetan Buddhism. Very looked down upon. hop from one guru, one center, hop here, hop there, hop there, hop there, talk about this guru, talk about that center, talk about that temple, this lineage, that, very looked down upon. Why? Because we don't have the wisdom and the study and the learning to see through. So we take a past experience, project it onto another. Very dangerous. Very, very dangerous. Therefore, love from a guru is not the physical, emotional, material gifts you're getting. You may be getting physical, emotional love from your guru, but that's not love. What is love is the actual dharma that your guru takes the time to teach you, to share with you again and again. That is love. That is real love. Why? Because if you apply those teachings, many things in you will transform. That is love. Why is that love? Because then you won't ever suffer again. You think about that. So a summary of this chapter is very simple. Guru devotion is a progressive acceptance of one's failures, and from those failures, the fears that arise to be discovered. And to attack those fears by correcting what we have done wrong. So in the past, if we gave up easy, we don't give up anymore. When we don't give up anymore, we won't have any fears about that. When we won't have any fears, if people say anything about that, we won't get angry. We won't defend. We won't protect anymore. Very simple. Guru devotion is accepting one's failures. And accepting one's failures means realizing where the fears come from. Therefore, the cause is not on the outside. The cause is on the inside. That is real guru devotion. So you should be, listen carefully, you should be very, very, very devoted to your guru. You should surrender your body and your speech and your mind to your guru in the correct way. You should surrender. One who has guru devotion doesn't need to live near the guru. If the circumstances don't allow it, maybe they need to travel and teach or do other work. But their guru is, and them is very close, not because of proximity, but because they do their guru's practice. How can we be close to Shakyamuni? He's dead. By doing his practice. By achieving his enlightened state. That's the summary of that chapter. Page 72. If we change our basic fundamental thought, all outer actions will change. Your body language will change. Your facial expression will change. Your hand movements will change. The way you walk, the way you sit, everything will totally change if you change your fundamental thought. Because according to scientific studies, you read, we adults only communicate 30% by speech. The other 70% is non-verbal communication. Page 72, bottom paragraph. How we learn from our teachers is similar to how children learn from their parents. Kids soak up huge amounts of information about everything, very little conceptual, very little of it about what their parents say. Even in adult communication, only about 30% of meaning is conveyed verbally, and the rest of the meaning is carried by non-verbal signals. While I am digressing here, we know that brains of a child up to 5 years old and adolescents consume much, much more blood sugar than either adult or middle children, apparently because of the massive amount of learning, changing, and integrating they are doing. I would suggest an interesting research project to test the brain blood sugar levels of practitioners getting close to waking up. I'll bet that the levels will be significantly higher than normal. The things that children learn most deeply from their parents are things that their parents are persistently being and doing. So if your parents are interested in learning, it is going to be a lot easier for you to be interested in learning. If your parents are compassionate to spiders in the house and take them outside instead of killing them, then compassion for insects is going to be easier for you. If your father is a carpenter and gradually, according to your capacity, shows you how to hammer and saw, then you will learn more easily. That is because that is something that your father really knows how to do, and that his sharing with you is an expression of his love for you. In the same way, by watching, absorbing, and practicing, we can learn to embody some of the qualities of the teachers that we spend time with. That's why I told people, do you want to be like your father? Do you want to be like your mother? Do you want to be like that auntie or that teacher? That's why I always sometimes criticize when people tell me about their parents. I can sense the good qualities and some of the negative qualities. And sometimes you see a lot of children follow exactly the negative qualities of their parents. Why? It says here very clearly, it's not something I made up. I told you from Dharma, this is scientific. Because that's what we've been watching our whole life, and we've been exposed to that. So if your father's a closed-up person, doesn't talk, doesn't express, and creates a lot of pain around him because he doesn't express and talk, it makes you guess and wonder, you're going to grow up very easy being quiet. If your parents didn't encourage study, didn't encourage reading, and didn't encourage writing, didn't encourage learning deeper things, and they're always talking about gossip and music and fun and movie stars and singing, that's what you're going to be interested in when you grow up. Why? That's what you've been watching. If your father is a failure, it's going to be easier for you to be a failure. If your mother is a very kind person, and your mother is a very giving person, it's going to be easier for you to be that. If your mother is always throwing a BF, it's going to be easy for you. If your mother always showed bad moods, then it's going to be very easy for you to show bad moods. Why? You will follow what your father and mother is like. Very similar. And remember, if we don't change our fundamental mind, only 30% of what we say, listen carefully, only 30% of what we say is expressed by speech. Before people talk to us and after people talk to us, they get deeper messages. That's why I always tell people, sit well. Don't be like this with people. Don't sit there arrogantly like, you know. Don't. Because your body language shows your state of mind. The way you dress. The way you smell. Whether you brush your teeth. Whether you fall asleep all the time when people are talking, whether you knock things over, whether you break things, whether you forget things all the time. All these qualities are what people can see without you talking. You don't need to talk. That's why highly trained people in meditation, they can observe a person. A few minutes, they know what they're going on in their mind. Scientific again here. Very sharp and quick and aware person. They can look at a person, the way they talk, the way they move, they know their mind. They know what they're thinking and what's going on. They know very well. Why? They have trained their mind in observation. We only communicate 30%. So what you say can be a lie, can be BS, can be true, can be kind, can be gentle, but your words will hold very little meaning for someone who knows how to observe your face and your eye, and your body movement, especially the eye. You can look at their eye and know if they're lying or not. You can train yourself. It's called awareness. Successful people, forget Dharma, successful people are people who are alert. Where have you seen a stupid, slow, sleepy person who's successful? You ever see President Bush fall asleep when he's giving a speech? He's not really successful, but he's doing a great job killing people. Do you see him falling asleep? Or when he's meeting another president, the Russian president or something, or when he's meeting our prime minister of this country, do you see the prime minister of our country giving a speech at the White House and President Bush in the corner? Of course not. Of course not. Who falls asleep like that? Think. Or if you're with another leader, do you think you can sit there like this? Or don't care, or like, your body language tells you exactly your state of mind. So if you're always falling asleep, what does that mean? You never pushed your mind to achieve more. You're very happy being unhappy, being stupid. And the way you dress tells so much about you. You say, but I'm a practitioner, it doesn't matter, why be attached? Yeah, you're not attached. So if you're not attached, why don't you dress for others? If you're not attached, why don't you clean for others? Don't talk about you're not attached. That's great. If you're not attached, then don't be stingy because you hurt others. Don't be miserly. Dress for others, talk for others, act for others, move your body for others. Even the way you move your body. When you're sitting at dinner, do you sit there with dinner with your guru, your friends, your family? You say, after you finish eating, or you're like, I'm finished dinner, can we go home now? Think, what does that say about you? What does that say? You don't have to say anything. Everybody can see the fat slob laying there after dinner and don't care about manners or how he talks or how he acts or how she is around people. No respect for people at all. Why do you have not respect? Because you have a fundamental mind that you don't care about others. Maybe you're cute and fresh right now. You ain't gonna you're not going to stay cute and fresh forever. And everybody's not going to take it. So therefore, the way you dress, you're not attached to your dress. Fabulous. I don't have to dress up. I can look like a bum. I can look like a bum. I'm not attached. Sure. Then dress up for other people because they're attached. But why should I increase their attachment? You're not increasing their attachment. You're trying to make their mind comfortable so that you can keep them teachings to decrease their attachment. So when you make people happy, you work hard, you're polite, you sit nice, you have good manners, you dress well, you clean your breath, you groom yourself, you have good manners, you don't shout in public, you don't shout anywhere, you don't hurt people, then they will be comfortable with you. When you're comfortable with you, you can convey the Dharma to them. Instead of saying, oh, well, I feel that I should express myself and that's the way I am. Oh, brother. When I take one look at that, I just want to run. But then my Dharma might say, okay, teach him Dharma. Yeah. So if you're not attached, if you're not attached, you're such a great practitioner, you're so advanced, then you do what other people like. So if you're with this clown, you become a clown. If you're with this drag queen, you entertain them. If you're with this hoodlum and this murderer, you say, hey, what's the last person you killed? Oh, really? How'd you kill him? You don't encourage it. You kind of make his mind calm down. So if the guy is drinking, have a drink with him. Some high lamas go and have drinks with their students. You read here. Chökyam Trungpa was famous for drinking with his students. He brought people to enlightenment by drinking. Heaven forbid if Temrimji started drinking in Malaysia. And on top of that, he drinks. Oh, dear. He has hair. He's disrobed. I'm not disrobed. Let's make the record straight. I am not disrobed. Open up my gut and check if my vowels are there. And he takes money, and he's greedy, and he drinks. Add it to the list. I wouldn't mind drinking if it helped people, but I kind of am allergic. Many lifetimes I'm not drinking. Anyway, this life I'm allergic. If I drink a little bit, all red rashes grow all over me. It's major antihistamine time. I think, why can't I do all those things? All these things that people have, basic, drink a little bit, why not? I can't. It's like my body is made for not doing non-dharma work. I don't know, something like that. That's how I figure. It's not even an ego trip. I really believe that. So if you're so unattached and you're such a great practitioner, you've taken refuge, you have guru devotion, and you're a great Buddhist, if you are, then all these actions should be easy. Staying awake is very easy because it benefits others. Having good table manners is very good. Being polite to people is very good. Not screaming at people who get on your nerves is very good. Not cheating people is very good. That's guru devotion. That's great guru devotion. That shows your attainment. Don't tell people, oh, well, I had a dream about Tara, and guess what she told me? Fly a kite? I don't know. Oh, I see Buddhas, or I see visions, or I see ethereal beings. You probably do. So what? You look like one of those beings you see. They're ghosts, and you're a ghost too. In Tibetan, we say you're a ghost. What does it mean? Bad manners. Selfish. Ghosts are mainly selfish. They're miserly. So if you see ghosts, it must be you're good friends with them. You have some connection with them. Hallelujah. So that's not something to be proud of. If I see ghosts, I'm not going to tell people that. They say, but you're a Rinpoche. How can you see ghosts? Oh, well, I'm liberating them. What do you mean you're liberating them? How do you liberate a ghost? They couldn't be liberated when they're in human form. How do you liberate them as a ghost? It's like saying I can liberate my dog, teach him meditation. Yogi meditates 6 hours a day, does Vajrayogini. Hello? Not possible. Ghosts and dogs can't do meditation. They can only be subdued. So if you say you're liberating ghosts, it's time to buy a kite, a big kite, and fly it. You ain't going to get that over on this Rinpoche because I studied that part. And Buddha says, no, not possible. And guess what? Buddha's enlightened and you're not. Da da da. I need to be bitchy, but... Okay, so, think about it. 70% of our actions are conveyed 70% of communication between human adults. We're talking about adults. We're not talking about retarded people. 70% communication between adults is non-verbal. So they observe how you dress, how you eat, how you move, how clean you are, your mood, your talking, your action. Then they know how you are. That's why people think sometimes that people like me have clairvoyance. I don't have clairvoyance, but I observe. I'm not a great observer, but I can pretty much get a size of a person down. Not wonderful. I've been cheated before. I mean, there are people who are smarter than me. Yeah, it's all right. I accept that. But my point is, you can pretty much size up the person by the way they walk, the way they talk, the way they move, the way they look at you, the way they dress, even the color that they pick. You can pretty much tell. Oh, yes. So people say, oh, you're clairvoyant. Thank you, Ang Bao. They say, you're not clairvoyant. You're a great observationalist. Thank you, Ang Bao. I mean, whatever gets me Ang Bao, whatever they believe in, who cares, lah? As long as I get my Ang Bao and fit. And it might not be filled with $1 bill. Thank you. See, Rinpoche likes money. The whole world knows. Whatever. I've been sending my Ang Baos to Ganden for years. Nobody knows that. Since 1992 until now, I've been sending all my Ang Baos to Ganden to support the hospital, to put pumps into the water for the monks. I built a huge building there, 36 rooms, to put flooring, to rebuild the temples. I sponsor over 300 monks a month. Every month, the monks get money from me to survive. I sponsor nuns' coats. I send that money to His Holiness the Dalai Lama. It's not a lot, but it's what I have. Nobody knows that. I collect a lot of ang baos. Do you know why? I dare not use it. And any physical gifts I get, I offer up to the Buddhas immediately. I offer it with incense on my altar and make prayers for people make offerings. Because I'm not a Buddha, but I can offer it to Buddha for them to make merits. People don't know that. People say, oh, he's greedy, he wants money. Yes, I'm greedy. Why? The holy monasteries, we need to support the monks. The monks are doing study to become great masters. That's why. So if I'm greedy, yes, thank you very much. I'm very greedy. Give me more. And you see, you ask my assistants. You ask my financial assistants. All these people, where I send my money to. You can ask people to take care of my accounts. I don't take care of my accounts. For the record, I don't take care of my accounts. I don't even know how much I've got. I only sign the checks. Okay, I don't know. You know why? My money is to be used to serve other people. That is all. I don't take care of my own accounts. Thank God, because I'm very bad anyways. You know why I'm not attached to it? Because it's not my money. Whatever I get, it's not my money. I dare not take care of it. Dare not. It's not my money. There's a lot of things I want to do. Take a trip here, do this, buy this. I dare not. Why? I have money for the center, but I don't have money for myself much, and I dare not use up what I have. I'm one of these people who's very nervous about using up my money. And whatever nice things I have, nice car, nice house, is offered to me by people. I drop hints to people, you know. I want a nice car! Very subtle hints. So I look like I'm a successful Rinpoche. I want a nice car. And then when they go shopping, I insist on going, I want that one. But that's $40 million. I give him a Paris smile. That's right. I really don't. I'm greedy? Yeah, I'm greedy. Every Lama is greedy. Every Rinpoche is greedy. But they're not greedy for a self-cherishing mind. Don't judge a book by its cover. Very simple. So we attend Dharma teachings, we hear that. Now 30% is like that. Therefore, habituations that we have now is one lifetime from our parents. It can change. That's why I say if we apply the Dharma, it can change. Do you know why? Although if our parents are good carpenters, we become good carpenters. If our parents don't like to learn and talk gossip and very, you know, what's that called? Petty. Very shouty. We're very petty. And if we're very petty like that, and when we grow up, our mind is very petty. What? We like petty things, we're interested. If our parents always talk about religion and politics, that's what we're going to like when we grow up. If our parents are bohemians running around Egypt and Czechoslovakia and Belgium hanging out in a tent, that's what we're going to like. If our parents are learned and they like to learn, they're good character, we're going to like that. But whatever it is, we set an example for our children. We set an example. They're watching us. So you're thinking, yeah, but if they have good karma, they'll be different. Yes, but watching you will not help them open up their good karma. They might open up their bad karma. So if we spoil our kids rotten, we don't love them. We are not loving them. Do you know why? Because after we're gone, they're going to destroy everything we gave them. everything. That's not love. It's never been love. So we have to realize that. You see, when I say these things, some people say, oh, good, some people bad. It's a sensitive point, but that's my job. You've hired me, as Dzongsa Kensei says, to annihilate your ego. You've hired me to destroy your ego. The whole purpose of sitting on the floor and the guru sits on the table, on the throne, even that is annihilating the ego. You know why? It's to show respect to the Dharma. It's the first step. When we can show respect to the Dharma, we can show respect to other people. Of course, Malaysia is different. If you sit on the floor and your legs don't move anymore after that, for the next, you know, ever again, that's not respect to your guru. Why? Then you can't walk here to get the teachings anymore, right? That's different. But I'm giving you examples. So therefore, how we are can change if we have devotion. And devotion is fundamental change. When we change fundamentally, fundamental, everything will change. Isn't that deep? Isn't that profound? But isn't it highly logical? I love Buddha's teachings. I love it. Everything I am sharing with you all, ladies and gentlemen, today, everything I'm sharing is what I believe in. I believe in it 100%. I'm not here for business. I'm not here to convince you. I'm not here to get something from you. I am not here to get respect. I've got enough respect in Ganden. What I'm here is I'm telling you what I believe. I really believe when I'm speaking to you. And if I may say so, I've been trying to practice these, what I've been speaking for the last 30 years. I've gotten some results, but I'll get more. I will get more. You know why I'll get more? Because I had a vision, because I'm a high lama. I'm none of those. Because I will apply effort. That's all. I will apply effort. Just like Lord Buddha did, just like Tsongkhapa did. I will apply effort. The Dalai Lama is a Buddha, but he can't make me a Buddha. But if I listen to the Buddha's teachings that he teaches me, I can be a Buddha. Simple. Simple. I love the Dalai Lama's teachings more than the Dalai Lama. Because the Dalai Lama to me is a Buddha mind. His teachings is him. He is represented by his teachings. I take refuge in the Buddha's teachings more than I take refuge in the Buddha. So therefore, whatever habits we've grown up on with our parents and friends, it can change if we have guru devotion. And guru devotion is attacking our fundamental fears and our failures. What we failed in, to stop covering, to stop running away. Every time we run away, we cover. You think about that. That's guru devotion in a nutshell. And we must change the way we look, the way we present ourselves, our manners, the way we sit, and our facial expressions. Do you know why? What is the message we're communicating to others? Never mind you're a Buddhist. What is the message? What is the message? And then, when a guru loves you, don't think that the guru just comes and takes away all your problems. That's not love. Actually, when the guru takes away all your problems, it's a temporary help. But ultimately, once he takes away your problems, you must listen to his teachings and apply. Then you can avoid future problems. If you always wait for your guru to take care of your problems, but you never take care of yourself, you don't love your guru, and you're misusing your guru's love. You're misusing, using it wrongly. You see, this is not a cult. You know what a cult is? When the guru does everything for you, you don't have to do anything. That's a cult. Drink, drink. Like Sangyang Moon, I'm sorry to say, in Korea. 500 couples get married at one time. They had no will. They just get married. I met someone who followed that sect in Delhi. A German guy. He had to learn how to eat again. He had to learn to make decisions, to travel, to move, to go here, do there. You know why? Because when he was in that organization, he had no free will. So when he hung around with me and two other ladies, two European ladies and this German guy, we were running around Delhi. I forgot doing what. Anyways, I was there for some reason. And you know what? We had to tell this guy, get in the taxi. He just stood there. He's a he looks just like you and me. He's very sharp, very good looking. All the Indian ladies were staring at him. Just nothing abnormal. He's like, walk around like, oh, nothing. He couldn't make any decisions. None. That's how they reprogrammed him. So we have to say, get in the taxi, then you get in. Okay, let's go to the restaurant. And then when we sit there in the restaurant, we went to one of my favorite restaurants, Nirula's, in Connaught Circle in Delhi. He'd be looking at the menu, this guy. And we ordered, and he's still looking. I was like, do you know how to read? He says, yeah, I can. I said, what would you like to eat? He said, I don't know. And I thought he was just thinking. You know, 15 minutes later, the girl next to me whispered, he can't make a decision. We have to pick for him. So I had to pick something for him. And then every time we went to a restaurant, we picked whatever he wanted to eat. And then I had to tell him, go to the toilet. You have to go to the toilet? Yes. I had to be aware of that. I didn't want to flood. Oh, yes. Everything I had to tell this person. I'm not kidding you. I experienced that in Delhi. I know how people can be reprogrammed. I saw it. And then he told us about how he married this girl. I said, do you know? He said, no. He says, I've never dated her. I don't know her. I said, do you love her? He said, no. He said, well, I guess I do because I was a lover. I said, oh. I said, do you love her? He said, I think I do. I said, where is she now? He says, I don't know. I said, after you got married, what'd you do? We were told to go to a room and, you know, be a married, happy couple. I said, oh. I said, did you have bubbly with her? He says, yeah. He says, I was told to. And that's it. It went on and on. You can figure out the rest for yourself. Totally normal. In fact, a few years ago, I inquired one of my friends about how he is. He went back to Germany, but I didn't hear more about him. There is no signs of him being abnormal at all. Totally reprogrammed. I'm not saying that sect is bad or that teacher is bad. I don't know. But what I saw in this person, I was like, uh-oh, what happened? I can't comment on other religions. But my point is, if that person could be reprogrammed like that, why can't we reprogram ourselves to be a Buddha? Why can't we? I saw that. So that's why everything I teach you is not something that I just read in a book. I saw and I believe it. He looked like Brad 10 years ago. A little taller, darker hair, and thinner. Is it you? Are you from Germany? Oh God, it's Brad. I knew he looked familiar. All right. So, that's love. Remember, your guru is in the hitting block. Your moods, he's got to swing with your moods. He's got to do what you want, as you like, when you want, sit up, sit down, as you like. That's not a guru. That's a hired slave. And then when our guru doesn't do what we want, we go and criticize him, say negative things, spread rumors. And then we don't want other people to know what happened to us, so we say negative things to our guru to push him down so that other people don't make us lose face. It's fear. That's happened to me many times. I met many people who don't like what I'm saying. They run away, they criticize me, they say negative things. Me, I heard them even saying that about my gurus, Kensurumji. Even old lamas, they criticize them. They say negative things about him. I'm shocked. I'm shocked what people can do. Why? They know nothing. It's like me, an engineer, and go and criticize a doctor about how he does surgical procedures and tell him and then spread rumors about how bad. I don't know anything. Remember, page 77, very beautiful. Two more lines and we're done. Page 77. The bottom is, Michael also addresses one of the most important points about devotion, which is often understood. Remember this, everyone. Devotion is not emotion. The last paragraph, despite the fact that His Holiness is ahead of the Drupa Kagyu lineage of Tibetan Buddhism, sometimes it takes time to realize who he actually is, as Michael recounts. He's talking about Gyawan Drupa Rinpoche. This is because he is so natural, never standing on ceremony, meaning hiding behind ceremony to be who he is, or making you feel that you are less than him. It is easy to forget what a high and great Lama or how extraordinary he is. He has such humility and ease about him, as well as a natural authority. So what he says here is that we should never, although our gurus may be friendly and nice and kind and on our level and sit with us and joke and play, and he doesn't stand on ceremony. He doesn't stand on his title. You have not seen your guru in his environment. You have not seen your guru with his people. You have not seen your guru in the monastery and how he's respected. You don't see how the old monks prostrate to him. You don't see any of that. All you see is what you see every single day. But when we start relating to our guru just as an ordinary person, there's some danger. In the beginning, we can be friends. But if we remain friends with someone, what's the point? If you're sick, you just remain friends with a doctor and never become your doctor, you will never be well. If you're sick, always just be friends with the doctor, but never he become your doctor. You cannot get well. So in the beginning, you become friends with your guru to check, to investigate, to see. That's good. But if he's your friend after 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, and you still say he's my friend, you're losing out. You're losing out. Why? You don't see your guru in the real environment. You don't see his true nature. You don't see his true character. He may be simple. He may sit with you. He may eat with you. He may run here and do things with you. It makes you feel very comfortable and very equal. But once we start thinking that, we have to be very careful. Why? We have to be able to switch roles. We have to realize who our guru is and that he is simple, he is natural, he comes down to our level, and he eats and jokes and plays with us out of great skillfulness and compassion to make our minds comfortable. That is his reasoning. So we have to remember that. If we see our guru in his natural environment, how he's respected and loved and cared, and how his own people treat him, we will be ashamed. That happened to me when I saw my guru in Ganden. When I saw my guru in Ganden, how he was treated, and now how he was treated outside, I can see. And it doesn't faze him at all. It doesn't change him at all. It doesn't change his love and care for others at all, because he doesn't sit on ceremony. I saw that with my own eyes. So it's very important. Very, very important. All right? And that is to keep us an awareness. We can be friendly and happy and close and fun and joke, but we have to realize the real purpose of us being with our guru. It's not for jokes and fun and friendship and love and money and financial help. It's not for that. That may come along, but what it's for is to annihilate our self-cherishing mind, to change our fundamental thoughts. That's the reason we hang around a guru. And if a guru gives us an assignment, we don't do it well, and we avoid future assignments, it's also running away from fear. Why is that running away from fear? Because we projected our previous failure onto future everything we fail. We shouldn't do that. We shouldn't. Remember, devotion is not emotion. You're happy one day, next day you're not happy with your guru. Devotion is not emotion. Page 81, bottom. As Gyawan Drukpa Rinpoche says, the next time I saw, as this guy says about Gyawan Drukpa, the next time I saw His Holiness in his tent, he said, "I understand you've been experiencing some problems." I explained my dilemma, and he calmly replied, "As far as all this guru business is concerned, it's just that we don't know ourselves who we really are. However, the guru is in touch with himself, so we need the guru as a kind bridge to help us to get closer to ourselves. The guru is able to guide and support us so that we can become more understanding of our own nature." He only spoke for a few minutes, but during this time, my whole mood changed from worry and concern to tremendous feeling of warmth and reassurance. He continued, The test of whether a guru is genuine, if he helps you to get close to yourself, then you can call that person a guru. If a guru doesn't help you do that, it doesn't matter how famous or well-respected they are not your guru. His Holiness Gyawan Drukpa says that. The last part, page 83. Third paragraph down. He criticized his guru for living in a luxury hotel in Delhi that was offered to him. So when we left in the morning, His Holiness told me that they'd been looking for me the previous night. He commented that the area I was staying in was very interesting and lively with so many people on the street so late. I explained that that was why I liked the area. When I stay there, I know I'm really in India rather than staying in an expensive modern hotel where I could be anywhere in the world. He then said very thoughtfully that he would like also to stay in that area like that sometimes if he had the choice. But the people expected him to stay somewhere nice as he represented the lineage of the teachings. I was surprised at his reply and argued that this was just their concept and it would probably be a good teaching for people for him to break their expectation. He agreed but wondered if people would really understand this or would just confuse them. So what he's saying here is very beautiful, that the guru must manifest what the people expect. The guru can't always break their concepts by directly facing them head on. If you're a lama, if you're head of a lineage, look, it's very simple. The traditions are very different. In Thai Buddhism, I've stayed in Thailand for a few months. I've visited the monks and talks, have exchanges with them. I was very fortunate. I met some very scholarly monks. Simplicity, walking with no shoes, wearing one set of robes, having an umbrella, is all very easy. The whole country supports you. Everybody accepts. But they can't do that here. You walk around here with no shoes, walk around the street begging, they call the police. You get a monk begging on Bukit Bintang, they take one look at you. You think about it. Tibetan lamas are different. Tibetan lamas come from a high, cold country. They have to wear shoes. They have to wear dark clothes. They have to wear thick clothing. And Tibetan lamas have many different types of robes, not just the monk robe. This is another type of robes. For special ceremonies, they have different types of robes. It doesn't mean you're a monk or not monk, depending on what robe you wear. In fact, many of the monks in South India, Ganden Sera Drepung, when they travel from South India to Delhi 2.5 days, they wear lay clothes and travel up and down. It's much easier to get tickets. It's much easier to go here, much easier to sleep. Everything's much easier. Much, much easier. It's allowed. There are many types of robes. High lamas wear exactly what I'm wearing in Tibet. You can look at old pictures. Why do lamas wear robes when they teach? Why don't they wear their lay clothes? Their guru tell them to, yeah, but there's a reason. The reason is because people have that expectation they should wear that. If the lama simply wears a nice shirt, nice pants, sits on, they think, hey, they have a perception. The lama should be like that, like that, what? That's their perception. The lama must acquiesce. Similarly, Tibetan lamas, they have a grandeur about them. They have thrones, they have tankas, they have brocades and silks. It has that look. So when you see a Tibetan lama sitting simple with nothing, they go, oh, there's nobody. Then many have thrones and you have all the rituals and all these stuff. They go, oh, it's somebody. So why is it nobody and somebody? Because it'll fit your perception to learn the Dharma from this person. That's all. So a lama might drive in a grand car to show you he's successful. He's got great students. And the students support him. Why? Humble you. And other people say, oh, look, see, he's so greedy. You can't win, but there's more benefit in the first one. So a lama has a teaching room, has tankas and has thrones and all that stuff. Why are you walking? Oh, it's a Tibetan lama. Oh, it's a Tibetan setup. Oh, it's a high lama. Oh, wow. Oh, I want to learn. That's their perception. So lamas in every country, they change themselves to fit the perception of the people. Totally. They have to. They have no choice. No choice. They have to fit the perception. So therefore, this book is about finding yourself through learning with a spiritual teacher. It's been very enriching for me because I learned a few new things and I saw perspectives from another way. And then I also learned because I didn't have much chance to study other traditions, that all the other traditions are exactly the same as Gelugpa. Same. The thoughts and everything. It's just the teachers, the names are different. Exactly the same. And I think that's fabulous. That's one. The second thing is this is what our class is about. Look tonight how much you've learned, how much you've absorbed. It's a little late, but it's worth it. You're worth it. You've stayed late at parties licking people before. So why not sit here and lick yourself, spiritually lick yourself with an inner secret tongue? And to make it on time and do the pujas together, do a meditation together is very beautiful. And we have to thank the people who organize all this. We have to thank the people who sponsor this. We have to thank the people who clean this. And we can't just think that our Dharma work is the most important and ours is a high priority. We're interdependent on every other Dharma person in the center to make things work. So we have to respect all Dharma workers and Dharma people. How do we show them respect? When they piss us off, we don't piss them off back. Simple. Don't think you're independently independent. You're not. You're dependently independent. Am I playing with words? No. Dependently independent means you're not independent. You're still dependent on others to be independent. So you're not as independent as you think. We need to respect. Especially in meetings, especially with each other. And most important, and I'm not saying this because I want this, most important is in the presence of our guru. Not to argue with other students and show bad body language and to be rude and to fight. Or in our guru's temple, or in our guru's throne, or in our guru's presence, or with people who have guru samaya, we shouldn't. Do you know why? Those are the very objects we use to collect merit. So it will be a bigger demerit if we do it around them. So if we argue and bitchy and we say nasty things to people in our guru's house, in our guru's presence, in this guru's center, near his throne, or near people who have samaya, the negative karma is much more heavier. Do you know why? Because those are objects you use to create merit. You create merit with your guru. You create merit in a temple. You create merit with the statues. You create merit with other beings with samaya. You create merit with other people's with vows. So if you put them down and misappropriate them or use them or shout at them or show dirty action or negative action for them, the demerit is higher and more. And it shows you a lack of respect for your guru. So if you've done that, you must confess it. How do you confess it? By facing it's been done and overcoming it. So that your guru will be happy with you and give you gifts? No. So that your inner guru will be happy with you and give you gifts, the gifts of love and respect. That's very important. So that's why in meetings, in one student to another, it's very important to hold ourselves and to be the best we can and to use beautiful speech and to make each other happy. It's very important. Harmony. Why? That is guru devotion. Each time you lash out at another student, I lash out at another worker, I lash out at another staff, you're not practicing guru devotion. You say, I want to run away. You can run away. If you can't practice guru devotion with your guru, where do you think you can practice guru devotion? Where do you think you can practice? That's guru devotion. So you spent a lot of time tonight. I've spent a lot of time tonight. And a lot of people spend a lot of time to arrange all this. Some of us are tired. Never mind. Like I said, you can sleep tomorrow night. In a short time, you guys are going to have a lot of breaks. You can sleep all you want. But you learned something. We read something. And these videos were created with a lot of effort from people. I watched over them first to make sure that they would be appropriate for you. I spent time listening and examining. Then people arranged this. People even burned covers for you. Everything's been done to offer to you. Everything's ready, in-house. How kind everybody is. How kind Kichara House is. How kind Kichara members are. And how sincere Kichara members are to spread the Dharma to others. How kind Kichara House is. That's how I look at it. How kind Kichara House is to me. How kind Kichara House is to me. How kind Kichara House is to the people here, to these people in this city, in this country. May Kichara House grow and expand and become bigger. How kind they are. And you don't know all this work that's been done. You weren't here all night burning this for 10 hours. You didn't come here to clean and sweep up with the cushions. You didn't buy the water. You didn't pay the bills for the air conditioning. You didn't arrange Rinpoche's things. You didn't make sure he was fed. So why do I say that? To make you feel, push you down? No. To make you think, oh yes, everybody's very kind. Everybody's very kind. And it's like that for all Dharma centers. It's like that for everyone, everywhere. We're dependently independent. So if we're dependently independent, we need to always meditate on the kindness of others. Always contemplate and apply. 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 And not run away from our own inner guru. Guru devotion is the most supreme practice. That's why in Tibetan Buddhism, in Tantric Buddhism, we recite the three refuges like this. Namo Guru Be, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dharmaya, Namo Sanghaya. So Namo Guru Be, Namo Buddhaya is one. I take refuge in my Guru, I take refuge in the Buddha. Then that's one. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. Namo Dharmaya, Namo Sanghaya. So in the higher teachings of Tantra, Namo Guru Be comes first. Why? It is the kindness of our Guru who conveys the teachings to us. The Buddha is dead. The statues cannot talk. The tankas and pictures cannot talk. It is the kindness of our Guru who spends hours and hours and years and months teaching us. And before he taught us, he spent years and months and much sacrifice to his own comfort to learn the Dharma from his Gurus, to learn the Dharma from his teachers, and to sit thousands of hours to receive the Dharmas, and to sit thousands of hours to do retreats, and sit thousands of hours to learn and meditate and practice to be able to come to teach you. How kind my Guru is. I take refuge in my Guru. I support my Guru. I back up my Guru. And when I support and back up my Guru, I back up myself. Even before the Guru met you, do you think he just was born as a Guru? He definitely had to do years of study, years of sacrifice, give up his own country, give up his own place, give up his comforts, give up everything and live in very difficult situations to learn and take the Dharma in to come and teach you. So you may see brocade and silks and tankas and beautiful buildings and nice cars now for the Guru. That's the result of the Guru giving all the time for many lifetimes. But before this, you didn't see the Guru living in a small room, leaking roof, with very little food, no support, no sponsors, no help for many years. That was my case for many years. No one saw that. I suffered tremendously from poverty and from hunger in Ganden for many years. The first time I came to Malaysia, I was very skinny from lack of food. That was the truth. Many of my students know me from the first time I came. So for me, I've been through that. I have this. It doesn't make much difference. It doesn't make much difference. Why? My purpose is not this. My purpose is to convey the Dharma. I was sent here to convey the Dharma by Kyabji Lati Rinpoche, Kyabji Kenser Jamba Yeshi Rinpoche from Ganden. They sent me. They asked me to go. They asked me to continue. When I went back to the monastery last year with 62 of you, everybody saw the head monk, the abbots, the senior representatives all requested me again to teach the Dharma continuously. Don't stop. Live long and teach the Dharma. So when I wear the hat, they offer the offerings to me, as you saw, the meaning is that they offer the Buddha, they offer the Dharma, they offer the Sangha to me. The Buddha, the stupa in the Dharma book means bring Buddha's awareness to others. Teach Dharma to others and bring people to Buddha's mind. They requested me in the monastery over and over. It means don't stop what you're doing. Even now, I get that all the time. Every time people go back, they send me gifts or whatever from Ganden, envelopes and katas. Why? The meaning on the Mendo Tendo means request me to continue to turn the wheel of Dharma. This is my monastery requests me. Look, it's not easy teaching the Dharma. It's not easy dealing with people. It's not easy being in a foreign culture. It's not easy trying to make them accept everything that you know that they don't know. It's not easy being here. Weather-wise, help-wise, it's not easy. I prefer very much to be in my monastery. I love Ganden. I love it. I'm a life member. I have my certificate. I have my ID card. I keep it very proudly. Ganden monks have to have an ID card. I have one. My whole status and name is there. I love it. I'm very proud of it. They put my birth date wrong because Tibetans never know their birthday. But I like it because they wrote me 1972. I was like, oh, thank you. They say, but is that you? One of my friends said, well, I'm the only Tentoku Rinpoche dentist over there. And they say, born 19. Because you know what? The administrators, the monastery, nobody knows their date. They just write anything. So they don't ask you your date. You know, you don't go up there or whatever. They just give you your card. They identify. They stamp it. They put whatever they want, give it to you. But your name's got to be correct. That's what I got. So I was thinking about go up there and tell them my date's wrong. I said, why be so attached? That's right. Or I would be somewhere in North India in a very cooling, quiet place in the mountains like Kulu Manali, enter a retreat. Oh, I love it. Why do you think I want to travel all over the place and teach a bunch of freaks and weirdos who don't want to practice, full of controversy, criticism, always putting down, always judging and judgmental, always knocking me down, always saying I'm disrobed, I'm wrong, I practice evil things, I'm against the Dalai Lama, I'm the monastery kicked me out, these people don't like me. I hear that all the time. Whatever. But I'm not the only one. There's a lot of Rinpoches I hear that. We talk among each other. I'm like, what they say about you? Oh, they say I slept with her. Did you? He says, I wish. I said, oh. Well, at least they're honest. But you see, the point is this. It's not easy teaching. It's not easy getting all this. You think you just see all this? It's been the last 12 years of backbreaking work for this. It's not easy. And I'm going to remain to teach because that's the order of my guru. Do you know why I'm going to remain to teach? I'm practicing guru devotion. Guru devotion is doing things that you don't want to do, but you know it's good for you. That's it. And I'm not telling, I don't hate anybody. I'd love to live in Malaysia just here, grow my hair longer, dye it blonde or something. And, you know, I mean, because my hairdresser keeps telling me to dye blonde. I'm like, I don't want to. They say, but, you know, you can't. I say, I'm going to look weird with blonde hair. I'm going to look like Marilyn Monroe teaching Dharma. No, thank you. But no, I don't want to. You see, there's a lot of things I want to do. There's a lot of things I like to do. I can't do it. Many of the things that I personally would like to do, I can't do. I would like to do business. I would like to do business and make my own money. I really would. I would like to travel to different countries more. There's a lot of things I'd like to do, but I can't do. I'm not allowed to do. But I'm not suffering. I'm not suffering at all. I'm not telling you I'm such a great person. See, I sacrificed so much to be here. No. You see, I love my guru. I love the Dharma, and that's the most important thing in my life. So I follow what they say. I follow what they say. Why? I believe that guru devotion is the highest practice. So instead of sitting at their feet in Ganden, groveling and pretending I'm holy, I might as well go out to the land of the barbarians and teach. I'm a barbarian too. That's why they sent me here. We match. It's love at first sight. Hi, Kylie Minogue. I hope you're well. I'm finished. Any questions? Shocking. No question. I'm shocked. I'm very, very shocked. No questions at all. Okay, goody, goody. Gumdrops. I have, oh yes, and what I want to suggest is, how many people is here? Can we get a quick count, please? How many people is here? Everybody's 25, 26, 23, 22, 18, 24, 33, 32, 1, 4, 5, 9, 12, 13, 18, 17, 15, 14, 29, 20, 22, 23, cookies, count twice, 33, 34. couldn't know. 50, yeah. Okay, 48, 50, whatever. See, one room, same perception, different. That's the mind. Now, when you guys watch this video, I would like everybody to get into, oh, I love it, little cell groups. Meaning I don't want you to watch your video by yourself. I want you guys to get together who you're comfortable with and watch the video together, like five or six people together. Won't that be fun? Yes, yeah, like Miss Anna and Kim and maybe Henry and Angel and Madam. I mean, they're all one little group. I don't know. They can get together and they can watch this video together. Do you know why? I want you guys to discuss with each other. It'll be more meaning. Then people like James and Juan and Chrissy or Chris and I don't know, a few of you Saraswati clowns can get together and watch it. It's in English, Chinese. Then we have Miss Ye Yi and Joseph and Sing Pew. I don't know, a couple of Nelson. Oh, Nelson needs a cell group really bad. He needs a cell. You ask anything, Nelson's like, I don't understand. I'm like, why not? You just watch him. When you ask him a question, his whole facial muscles move up and down. I don't know why, left and right, up and down. Yeah, we have little groups. I don't know, like, we have Mabel and Tiki. Well, who's their little Oh, Jenny. That's their lover, you know. I don't know who else is their lovers. They got a couple of lovers. Everybody got their own lover. Get together, have a little cell group. Isn't that fun? And Maple's fabulous. If you go to her house, that's it. It's definitely food. Even if she's not there, you get food. So that's a fun cell group. And then we got Paris and Drag Susan and Sharon, a couple of other freaks there. I don't know who your little clique is. Get together, get a cell. We should form a Dharma book cell group. So five or six or seven people you're familiar with and watch the video together. Wouldn't that be fun? Maybe like your Adrian, right? Adrian and what's his name here? Wong here, Joey Wong. And maybe we can have, what's your name? Baldy here, Bald Eagle. B.E. here, and I don't know who else, a couple of freaks. Maybe Kelvin, very interesting. And then maybe we stick with that, with David. David's good. David's very good at explaining things, very good. If your tongue gets a little wet, you can deposit on him. Get together, that'd be kind of fun. I know you guys form your own little cell group. Doesn't that sound fun? So please, and Koki is his own cell group. So with Koki, we stick Wyming, we stick Andy. Let me think who else, what other freaks are there that'll fit him? Because these guys will talk the whole night. And that's only first 5 minutes of the movie. Oh God. That's right, you know Koki. And then, we can have, the Indian slut. Bill was in India turning on everybody. Being seductive, showing his leg. When he got strip searched at the airport, it was the best time of his life. He's a spiritual slut. It means you're just friendly. A real one? No, he's a very good person. And that's right. I'm just kidding. But anyways, I don't know what will offend you, that you're a good person or not, so I just say whatever make you happy. Like Bill... And Bill's lover, spiritual, don't get excited. Ruby, you wouldn't get excited. Like, why? And I don't know, a couple of you other freaks. Ruby, who's the other people? Ruby always SMSs nonstop. Oh, I don't know, you guys figure it out. JT's going to be an interesting one. I don't know. And JJ will figure out his own group. Everybody decide who's your cell group, please. Let's do that. When we have videos, we have reading. Let's get together and read and do things together. It'll be fun. Do you know why? We'll learn much more. Especially someone in our cell group has a little more experience. I mean, you can have five people, six people, seven people. If you have it too big, it'll be complicated. One can make it, cannot make it, can do this, cannot do that. It gets unnerving after a while. So if it's small, it's easier. Wouldn't that be fun? You can meet at your own little houses, read, and watch and talk and discuss. You'll learn much more, I promise you. It's going to seem a little like, oh no, another thing to do, but try it. It'll be fun. Who thinks that's a good idea? Raise your hand. Oh, God, man, you're such a sore loser. He's like, Milarepa doesn't want to join with the fun. It's all right. We'll set you up with a few lickers. That's it. And after they lick you from head to toe, you're going to love it. That means it's going to be like, oh, God, finally, liberation. No. That's right. That means never, ever been licked in his whole life. Look at him. Would you want to lick him? That's so rude. Don't you love this Yaki? Yaki comes from a wonderful, fabulous, nice girl background. Very traditional Mahayana. Offered the three incense, or is it one? Or three. You know, on Kuan Yin birthday, no eat meat, namo amitofo, monks have to be good, and everything's perfect, and don't wear your too low. You know, when she met me, she was like this. Now she's like. And, you know, and then when the first time she met me, she was just like. Yeah, that's what and now she's like, oh, she's like, whatever. And by the time I'm done with her, she's going to be licking everybody, I tell you. Give her another year. The next wedding, she'll be there. She'll say, move over, JP. She'll be like, Then we've got a couple of upstarts here. We've got a couple of little people there. Cannot this, cannot that, cannot that, cannot this, cannot that, cannot that. I won't point any fingers. Cannot that, cannot this. After I'm done with them, everything can. But with a good motivation. That's right. Dharma is fun. You know why it's fun? Because we are fun. Let me repeat. You guys would never fit anywhere else. You're freaks. You want the cake and you want to eat it too. And you don't want to be stuffy. And you don't want them to stick in some room and chant for 50 days and don't talk and no meat. No way. Give me the meat. Give me deities that are naked. You guys are perfect. You are the people that all the lamas and gurus and all the buddhas just went, no hope. So they sent you down. So see, because you went that level, they said down, then you went that, down, down, down. So nobody left at the bottom except me, hello. That's right, so I'm like, welcome home. Climb the ladder and then that line. So you climb all the way down like, hi, let me help you down. But I'm not very low. I'm not the three lower realms, you know, so it's not that low. What else? Look at this. We have fun. We can relax. We can be ourselves. Look at you guys. You guys are so different, so unique, so opposite of each other. I mean, if it wasn't for Dharma, you wouldn't even look at each other. No. You wouldn't look at each other. You wouldn't lick each other. Nothing. No, really. Just look at yourselves. Look. Look at JP sitting in the corner like, you know. You know that guy on Kiss? Doesn't he look like that? The one that with the tongue out? Then you got that. Then you got then you got what's his name? You had Wai Ming there sitting there like. Then you have Da Ming. Da Ming's, you know, a Buddha incarnation. He's like. Everything's perfect about him. Then you're in Paris in the corner dying to get out of her clothes. She just wants to run around naked like she does at home. Dying. Then you have Ben here. Oh, dear. Ben had a vision of Buddha Shakyamuni who ordained him as a monk. That's why he cut off his hair. Then we have Andy here. He doesn't talk much, but we have Andy here. Then you got Nelson. Like I said, when you ask Nelson a question. No. I'm like, huh? And then JJ, everybody knows JJ. He's some missionary hanging out. You know, he was hanging out all kinds of flyers, passing out. He makes this and makes that. He's on bookkeeping down. You want to be a Buddha? You want to meet Buddha? You want to be a Buddhist? You want to be a Buddhist? And you want all kinds of really weird. And there's some other things he does that are very weird too. Thank you. Here, you can have it. Just kidding. <Yeah. laughs> You are greedy. Do you see him somewhat do it? And then when I took it away, he's like, oh, greedy. All right. Yeah, poor. Here, come. Now. Ah, yeah, some people never learn their lesson, did you see?
You want?
Put in your wallet. You don't want, don't go, but ah.
Here.
There you go. Uh-huh. That's right. Then we have Brad back there in the corner. I forgot what country he's from, but I don't care. He's a people, the end. Sitting there looking at me like, you know. He's practicing facial muscles. Yes. I don't need any coaching for acting. I can coach him. How to BS people really well. A class by Tamara Michi. Isn't that great? That's right. And then we have Madame Hani. Oh dear. You used to see her when she lets her hair down. She's even kinkier than Anna. I said kinky. Don't you know what kinky means? All right. We'll have Bill Keith explain to you what kinky means. Bill Keith will be very good at explaining kinky. See, you ask Datin there, she said, no, kinky, she's not kinky, she's very nice. But you ask Bill Keith, oh, I tell you. Bill Keith is one in white, the famous designer from Kuala Lumpur, you kampong girl. That's Bill Keith, who do you think that is? Your mother. See him for a dress. Ah, yeah. Younger, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's very nice. How about your lover?
My lover?
Yeah.
My lover?
Yeah. Kinara. Oh, dear. Ken, right?
No.
Why not? What's wrong with her? I am. Just kidding. You see, these are the kind of people we have here. Easy, open, can joke, we can talk. This is our dharma. This is our dharma. We're just easygoing, talk, but the meaning is what? This is our people. Why can't we have fun when we have dharma? Why can't we be natural and be ourselves? Of course we can. Mr. Ngao thinks today he won't be teased. He thinks that this is the first dharma talk that's went through that he never got mentioned or teased at all. He wore a yellow shirt to blend into the yellow wall. It didn't work. That's right. He thinks, oh, my wife got it at the first, but now I'm all right. I've never been talked about, no cherry blossoms, nothing. I better keep quiet and stay still. Don't make any noise. There's a mosquito that's been trying to hover around his ear, but he's quiet. He doesn't want to bring attention. He's like, yeah, that's right. Wonderful. So no questions. It's amazing. I better cut it off now before it's too late. I mean, too late that I get questions. And then you have to stay here until 4 a.m. I don't mind. I stay up the whole night and I sleep around 6 a.m. That's why I look fabulous. Good. I thank the people who organized this. I thank the Kachara Media and Publications Department for preparing all these videos for us. Work very hard throughout the night. They're overworked. They need help. I thank the liaisons who made this possible. I thank the sponsors who made all this possible. And I would like you guys also to thank yourselves for doing something worthwhile for you to listen to Dharma Talk. Not Tenrinchi, Dharma Talk. It's not about seeing Tenrinchi. It's not about who your guru is. It's about listening to Dharma Talk. I want you guys to thank yourselves. Really, it's not a joke. It's not something polite. You think about it. I did something good to myself today. Finally, I attend the Dharma, and I leave here with more knowledge. I have a lot more questions, but at least previous questions are answered. Where there is no Dharma, let there be the Dharma. Where there is Dharma, let it become stronger. Where there is a misunderstanding of Dharma, may I personally take the responsibility to clear it. By listening to the teachings on transforming of the mind, may I change my fundamental mind. I don't change myself. I don't change what I like to eat. I don't change what I like to wear. I don't change what I like to live or who I like to live with. It's not that. It's changed my fundamental mind. And all the negativities that I've created that's disappointed myself, my inner guru, and my outer guru, I will not give up. For in giving up, is a greater disappointment. I will not listen to politics or engage in politics. I will not criticize any religion, any dharma, or any practitioner ever. I will not. And if I come across people criticize, I will use my knowledge to gently teach them and share with them to help them also. Why? They suffer just like I do. And I rejoice very, very much for listening to such holy teachings. And I rejoice in the people in this book written by Sherry Marshall, A Devotion. Beautiful experiences, different people with their beautiful spiritual journeys. I thank all of them. And I dedicate this to all the people who wrote this book. I dedicate that. May the land be good and at peace. May there not be natural disasters in this region or this area. May people's lives be long and healthy. May I repay the kindness of my parents back again and again and again by transforming my mind. May I bring Lama Tsongkhapa from the outside to the inside. May I hold my commitments well and my practice well, and especially my tantric commitments, may I hold them very well, more precious than my own eye, for life is short, nothing else matters. May the great lamas like His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, the Panchen Lama, His Holiness Kabje Trijan Dorje Chang, His Holiness Kabje Ling Dorje Chang, the two tutors of His Holiness, Ganden Tirimchi, the throne holder, and all the lineage holders of all the lineages, and all the great masters, His Holiness Kabje Sarangchi, and all their incarnations, and all the great Geshis, and all the great monks around the world, and lay practitioners, lay teachers, have fortune, health, and happiness, and may their wishes come true. May in this life and all lives, may we never be separated from Lord Buddha's teachings. May we always be born and spontaneously practice and be attracted and to be able to comprehend and understand. In this life and all lives, may we never be separated from a guru and a master who can convey the teachings to me, to us, in our own language, in our own atmosphere, in our own capacity, and to make things clear. That's all. Janju. Tony. Maje bana jigeji jeba ne ba me ba ya kone kondu pewa sho. Gewan. Chiji jabo. Trewe tsoni lante ni jewa losa trapa. Gangri rewe. Chene zing wang denzing gyatso yi, shabe siru padu ten ju ji.